on Juneteenth Friday. Rest of the holiday weekend wet, upper 80s. Richard Wetting at the Weather Channel for Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
It's 80 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
It's time for the Miller's Edge with four-time SEC champion and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here's college football playoff national champion Christian Miller on Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you guys are ready to roll here on the show. We got plenty to talk about. Dog days of summer in full in effect, but we still got some stuff to dive into. We'll definitely do that here on the show. We heard, at least I got to hear from Kalen DeBoer. I think it was earlier in the day. I saw a clip of him speaking at what looked like some, maybe those quarterback club events, Reed. I think that's what they're called, or one of those, you know, functions, right? I did see that he spoke to the media for about 7 minutes or so. So I think we'll go ahead and play that here in a moment, hear what he had to say. He covered a number of topics, a lot of familiar topics, Reed, things that, you know, about all you can really talk about right now as we kind of await, right? I think we're at, 80 days until football season, which is exciting to think about. I'll try to come up with somebody for 80 days. I think the Bama Standard does a good job posting guys at war number 80. I should be better about this. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. 80, nobody's really coming immediately, Reed. Anybody number 80 that I'm just completely forgetting about? I'm going to feel like an idiot probably.
No, I think me and you both probably will once, like, because it's one of those things where we think too much into it and then eventually we get hit with it and then we're like, oh man, how do we not think about that?
Well, it's like, you know, when someone asks you, like, what's your favorite song? And then it just seems like your mind goes blank and you have no idea. You're like, I listen to all this music. Granted, I'll be honest, I'm probably not the biggest music person, but you get the point. You hear music all the time and someone's like, hey, what's your favorite song? You just have no idea what to say. Or what's your favorite movie? I always go blank, and I'm like, dang, I have no idea. Well, here we go. Shout out to the Bama Standard here. I'm copying off of their post, right? They've got Wilbur Jackson. That's a little bit of a throwback, Reed. So, and him and Eric Curry, probably a little bit before our time. So, fair enough. I'm going to give both of us a pass on those two guys. Mike McCoy. Shout out to Mike McCoy. Play wide receiver. Then Josh Cuevas. I guess we probably should have gotten that one.
See, there you go. Yep.
Probably should have gotten that one, but we didn't. It's all right. 80 days until football season. That said, a lot of the similar topics that you'll hear from Coach DeBoer. Again, running game, offensive line questions. I think there might have been a question about recruiting, if I'm not mistaken. Ryan Williams, they asked about him and a couple other things. But 7-minute clip, we'll definitely listen to that. We'll react to it and we'll get y'all's thoughts, comments, concerns, all that good stuff. Plus, I saw that Josh Pate, he did join Crane and Cone, and that was like 20 minutes, but I think there's a couple points that I wanted to maybe hit from that. So instead of listening to the whole thing, we can listen to parts of it, break it down, react, respond, all that good stuff. You guys know how we do. Love to get y'all's thoughts on everything we're discussing. Of course, you can always call in 205-342-9904. I think it's a pretty smooth day, Reed. Don't have anybody playing as of now. So we're pretty much open. So we'd love to get you guys in on the conversations. And of course, you can always join us on any of the streams, whether that's on YouTube or X at the Miller's Edge. You can always join the chat, leave your questions, comments, and concerns right there. We'll discuss it, talk about it. And of course, you can discuss things amongst each other. And also on the Tide 100.9 Facebook page, we always stream live there as well. A couple other little notes and things that I've seen that I wanted to hit on, but aren't really crazy talking points, but just thought would be worth mentioning. I know one being Ross Dellinger again, when it comes to anything related to like the whole college athletics savior plan or whatever you want to call it, all the stuff we've been talking about with the Protect College Sports Act. Remember, we wrote that down, Reed. Ross Dellinger, he's always got like every single little detail update. To me, this sounds pretty interesting. The NFLPA and NBAPA sent letters to lawmakers, Reed, being supportive of that Protect College Sports Act. And NFL also released its own statement in support of the act. So I don't know if you got to see that, but I found that pretty interesting that they came out and were very vocal on their support for that, which I would imagine there's probably some benefits for those leagues with this whole deal. Let's think about the NFL for a second. I would argue that the NFL draft has become a little bit, I would say it's been a little bit affected, right? I don't know if you've heard this, whether it's from the pundits that are talking during the draft or just, you know, you pay attention to the players themselves and these draft picks read. But one could probably argue that due to NIL, a lot of guys are choosing to stay in school instead of entering the NFL draft. And some people have gone on to say that that's affected the quality of players to the point where when you get to the later rounds, it almost is like those are guys that would have been undrafted free agents. They're now becoming draft picks because there's not as many quality players entering the draft, which is kind of interesting because it's kind of like they were originally saying, hey, we have too many juniors entering the draft and it's a problem. Guys aren't being prepared for this and they're coming out too early. It's becoming an issue. And now it seems like they're kind of going backwards a little bit. Regardless, you got the other leagues coming out in support of this. So I guess as long as the Big Ten and the SEC can figure out their ends of it, which we already heard that there are some things that they wanted to iron out a little bit. Hopefully this can move forward, Reed, and hopefully serve as some sort of solution. But in regards of the NFLPA and the NBAPA, it looks like there's a short little memo, but it does just read that both of these organizations appreciate the bipartisan effort that has gone into developing the Protect College Sports Act from Senators Cruz and Cantwell, Schmidt and Coons, and believe that the bill includes several important provisions designed to protect college athletes, including guaranteeing NIL rights and providing medical and health care benefits. We encourage continued meaningful stakeholder engagement and negotiations to further strengthen the bill as it moves through Congress to ensure college athletes are protected and empowered. So from their perspectives, right, NFLPA, NBAPA, those are both designed to protect players, right? I mean, I can speak on that as a former player. They offer a lot of resources for guys, whether you're currently playing or a former player, and it's all about looking out for the guys, right, protecting the guys. So it makes total sense that they highlighted those key points because, remember, one of those being the health care provided for college athletes, something that I don't think has really been done. When you're in the program, it's, at least at Alabama, I can speak on Alabama's behalf. I mean, it's great. Again, I mean, braces, glasses, I mean, everything even outside of just football, you know, I guess things that you would think of are injuries, they got you covered. But this would protect folks, I guess, outside of those windows, which is great. So really cool to see those organizations stepping up and offering their support. Then it looks like the NFL statement, I think this is it right here. The National Football League applauds Senators Cruz, Maria Cantwell, Eric Schmidt, and Chris Coons for the bipartisan leadership in introducing the Protect College Sports Act of 2026. Healthy, stable, and thriving collegiate athletes is essential to the future of American sports, including Olympic sports. And this legislation is an important step to achieving that for the benefit of all college athletes and institutions alike. By utilizing proven models like the voluntary pooling of media rights under the Sports Broadcasting Act, which supports broad fan-friendly distribution of NFL games, this legislation will support college athletics and ensure fans will be able to access their favorite games across today's changing media landscape. The league looks forward to continue working with congressional leaders as this bill moves through the legislative process. Excuse me, if I can finish that. Reed, any thoughts on that? You think, I mean, it makes sense that they're coming out in support of it? Think it's a little random? Think it kind of is all tied together? I do notice NFL went a little bit further and mentioned the whole media rights deal that's been, I guess, discussed in this whole proposal. NFLPA and NBAPA were more just like, hey, man, you guys are representing players and have their best interests. We're all for NFL, of course, they're talking about the money side of it. We all know it's a business. Anything come to mind with this? You're just kind of like, oh, that's cool. Makes sense.
No, I think it does make sense, Christian. Just the fact that, and once again, I just think that it's just another step toward the right direction. And I've said it again, it's not maybe the permanent solution, but I'd rather there be a partly solution than there be no solution at all.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, like I said, don't know what that really does, if that helps tremendously with getting everything pushed or if it's just a, hey, we just want to look like we're supporting it because this somewhat includes us since these are the players that will be joining our league. I don't know. I mean, a lot of times people just do stuff for, I guess, the public perception of looking good. Maybe that's this. I don't know. But hopefully they do have some, I don't know, good intentions with this. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. We got to hit a timeout, though. When we come back, we'll talk some Alabama football. We'll hear from head coach Kalen DeBoer, who spoke to the media yesterday. 7-minute clip. We'll listen to the whole thing. We'll respond to it, get his thoughts on the latest coming out of, I guess, Tuscaloosa. As they, we talk about dog days of summer in the media. They've got their own dog days of summer going with their summer conditioning program. We'll hear from head coach Kalen DeBoer next right here on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Quick timeout.
Jeep Dodge Ram, Tuscaloosa's destination for iconic Jeeps. Owner loyalty earns 1500 cash back on a new 2026 Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393.
Keep AM radio in cars. Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text stop to stop. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, it's Christian Miller, and I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy, founded by attorney and professor Adam Lamparello, helping students at every level with mentoring, exam prep, applications, and career planning. Adam also represents students, faculty, and athletes in academic misconduct, First Amendment, NIL, and criminal defense cases, known for real care and relentless advocacy.
That's 800-923-6829. What do you have to lose? Call 800-923-6829. Again, 800-923-6829.
24-7, 365. We've got all your coverage of the Crimson Tide on Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
WTBC. Let's go ahead and hear from head coach Kalen DeBoer, who spoke to the media briefly yesterday, I think it was, while he was attending some event, like maybe a charity event. But we got it pulled up right here. He was asked a number of different questions. So let's go ahead and hear from the head coach himself.
How much does the leadership provided for the player-led practices influence your decision for the starter in the fall?
Oh, I think it's everything. It's not just about those practices. It's about what you see each and every day. And I mean, we got two great leaders, and so it has to be that way. I know that the respect by the team is what it needs to be. They believe in these guys as quarterbacks on the field. They also really love who these guys are as people off the field, and they're great. They're great teammates. And so they've obviously got different personalities. It comes out in different ways, but they attack every day. They go after it with their teammates, and I know the competition's strong right now, and it's going to be that way, I know, through the fall.
Coach, what would you like to tell your fan base about how you address the offensive line situation moving forward?
The offensive line,
right?
Well, I mean, we brought in a number of players. We had to with the graduation of 5 guys, a couple guys in the NFL, a couple more in the portal. So there were some needs. Of course, we had brought some high school guys in, and the rest had to be filled in with the portal. So they're all working hard. Love the direction that it's headed. Coach Clem, our offensive line coach, has done a great job. Not just from a teaching aspect, but the chemistry. Really pushing them, and he has great high expectations. He's done at a high level. He knows what it's supposed to look like, not just in college, but the NFL. And those guys really, I think, respect that part about it. And his efficiency of teaching, I think, stands out to me, and they appreciate that.
Coach Ryan Williams, in his third year with the program, been there your whole time. In this era where people bounce around, what does that mean to you, and how has he developed in his time there, now entering year 3?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that he's already in year 3. Time's flown by. And, I guess first thing I want to say is how proud I am of what he is also off the field, not just on the field. And that's what everyone sees. But, here's a guy that's going to have his degree by the end of December, and that's 2.5 years. He's, full-fledged in the schoolwork, spring, fall, and even right now in the summer. But from a leadership standpoint, he's out front. center with the team. He's a voice. He's one that guys count on. He's a great teammate. And then just, you know, to, you know, as far as your question, just with, you know, the portal and him sticking around, man, he just, you know, I think he made that commitment when he came. And, you know, he's a guy that just stands by his word. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of opportunities that probably have come across his plate in one way or another. And, you know, I just appreciate who he is as a person and, you know, what he wants to do here in Alabama. And so I'm looking forward to him building on what he's done already in the spring and the summer, leading into a great fall.
The kind of the heart of recruiting season getting cranked up. How do you feel about the class so far? Don't have a huge number of commitments, but how do you feel about things, yeah, where things are going?
Good number of guys. Another big weekend this weekend. You know, expect some more, some guys that haven't announced that, you know, we are aware of will be with us. And so just getting the right guys. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's getting the right players in. I think we did a good job of that the first couple of years we're here. It shows up in their playmaking on the football field. We played a lot of young guys that started on the field as freshmen or became starters or played starter reps, I guess, that number of reps. And looking for the development of those guys to pay off here this year. The guys that we bring in need to fill the gaps that we have and what we expect with graduation guys to the NFL. And so, you know, I think our staff does a great job of really sorting through it and coming up with the right people to fit our program and make our culture even stronger.
You've been out here a few times for senior bowl golf tournaments and recruiting, I'm sure. How important was it for you to make inroads with high school coaches and all that down here in the corridor, both the Maryville and the Pittsburgh?
Yeah, the level of football that's played here has been critical to the success of what we've done, you know, with our tradition here for many years, and it will be critical for our success in the future. And so, you know, something that I caught on to really quick when you didn't have to study the program long to figure out where a lot of the great players came from. So we'll continue to really focus hard on recruiting down here, looking forward to many more trips, obviously, meeting the great people here.
Since you've been at Alabama, what's been the most surprising thing that, you know, you've seen or noticed, anything you didn't expect that now after being there for a little bit, you now know, anything surprising?
I mean, the passion isn't surprising to me because you knew about it. And I mean, you spilt it all the way across the country, you know, throughout many years, the expectations and all that. So, you know, that's what he came here for. That's what he signed up for. And so I think that's what a lot of people expect to be the surprise. But that's what, you know, was exciting about coming here. It's probably the biggest surprise is how many people outside the state, you know, wherever you go, the following. And it's roll tide everywhere. And so that's enjoyable. It's a great part of my job. It's fun seeing all the people from coast to coast. You know, that loved the Crimson.
And there you have it. That was head coach Kalen DeBoer speaking to the media, I believe it was yesterday down in Mobile. Reed, I'll give you the floor, man. Anything stand out to you? He did hit on the offensive line. You know, they asked kind of what could you give the fans about the offensive line to maybe, I don't know, give them an update. Again, probably nothing huge since, you know, we've talked about it during the spring and heard from. Old, he'll be getting his diploma. Really impressive. I mean, there's some guys that get into college at 19 years old. So, I mean, really, really impressive stuff with that. Kind of crazy to think about. But anything stand out to you with what we heard from head coach Kalen DeBoer?
No, I think you touched on it, at least at the very beginning, about the offensive line. He said they're pretty much making, you know, they're making good strides, and that's good to hear, at least for what we saw from last season. And the fact that he also mentioned how Clem is pushing them, right? And not only that, but the chemistry, right? Like, these are the guys that you're going to be working around this next season, so you need to know their nicks and their knacks, right? So that y'all flow like a flowing offensive line, right? That it's just one big motion. Of course, there's different executions of it, right? Whether it's pull, outside block, inside block, but if you know how to work around the people to your left and your right, then it's going to make a smooth flowing offensive line, and hopefully coming this fall, a successful offensive line. Christian, I think your side of the stream has froze. If you want to try to reboot it real quick. Well, while Christian fixes his rebooting, we're going to go ahead and hit a break. But once we come back, Christian will give his thoughts on what Coach Kalen DeBoer said.
Tuscaloosa Tractor at 3921 Skyland Boulevard East or go to Kubota.com.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past, that has not been the case. And this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
Did you miss any episode on Tide 100.9? Don't worry. All of our shows can be found on Spotify and Apple Music and on demand on the Tide 100.9 app.
Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Sorry about that. I was telling everybody during the break, man. I think Xfinity, they claim that they're improving the service, Reed, but they, in fact, made it worse. I don't know how you managed to do that while allegedly improving things, but it is what it is. I did see a bunch of trucks around the area, so it might have been more of a physical, like, hardware issue more so than software. I don't know. We're good, though. We're back rolling. Reed did tease that I'd get my thoughts on that. Here's what I pulled away from that. He did mention, like, the quarterback battle, making that decision right during the summer. He's totally right. I mean, and I was listening to Josh Pate kind of talk about that whole deal where that's at. I agree 100%. I don't think anybody's really taking the lead, even though Keelan Russell performed extremely well at A-Day, even though I said I believe that he probably gives you the best chances to – you know, getting as far as you probably can, right? And the reason I say it like that is right now, and it's not just me, I think it's pretty shared. Alabama's viewed as, you know, like a 9-3 type football team. I definitely think that they could probably pull off 10-2, right? I think the schedule at first seemed a little bit more daunting initially, Reed. I know everybody was kind of talking about that, but I think the more you kind of analyze it, the way I view it now is you got a football team that's going to be very young. There's definitely going to be growing pains, a whole new offensive line, a new starting quarterback. The way I see this is you kind of like, I'm not saying the first five games will be easy games, Reed, but it's set up to where those first five games are definitely manageable. So the way I view the schedule is I'm like, all right, if they can get through those first five games, granted, there's going to be growing pains, but they can get through a hiccup free, which I don't know how confident anybody or everybody feels with that, knowing that, yeah, the one common theme I would say is we've kind of dropped at least one game we probably shouldn't have. And I feel like there's probably one of those type of games in that first five game stretch. That being said, back to the quarterback battle before I start getting off my point. I don't think anybody really has taken the bull by the horns just yet. And they asked kind of about how that process looks right now. And that is important. You know, during the summer, you got summer workouts, you got seven on sevens, you got a number of different things that guys will be going through. And it provides them opportunities, like you were just talking about, Reed, with the offensive line, growing, meshing, gelling, but also establishing leadership, which definitely comes from the quarterback position. So I think those guys are going to be putting a lot of work in that regard right now. So that's pretty much all you can do, seven-on-seven workouts and leadership. Then, of course, once training camp hits, the true battle resumes, and I think we'll have a little bit more clear of an answer once we get there. But I would say right now it just does feel kind of like this is a neck-and-neck battle, even as well as Keelan played, just because, I mean, seeing Austin Mack throughout the spring outside of just Ada, I mean, he did some really good things as well. So while Keelan Russell definitely gained some very good momentum from A-Day in the spring in general, I think it's still very much alive and well, that quarterback battle. Moving on to the offensive line comments, I mean, he spoke very highly, Adrian Klemm. I haven't heard anything bad about Klemm whatsoever. In fact, totally the opposite. I think it's going to turn out to be a really good hire, Reed. I mean, he talked about the respect. What did I say when we first heard that Adrian Klemm was going to be the offensive line coach? I said that, like, as a player, I understand how it is to have the right voice, right? Like from a coaching perspective, like, you know, there's all different types of coaches. You don't have to have played the game. And Coach Saban played at Kent State. It's not like he played at a super high level in the NFL. He went on to be the best coach ever to do it. But when it comes to especially position coaches, man, just learning from somebody, right? I mean, like, players have a certain respect for guys that they know have done it, right? There's just a different connection sometimes. And that's what I was expecting out of a guy like Adrian Klemm. That's exactly how it seems to have gone so far. And hopefully that has a direct reflect with what we see from this offensive line unit. Again, they're going to be young. They're still trying to figure things out. They're still trying to figure out the mesh, you know, piece like you described. Hopefully they're doing a lot of team activities off. It's not off the field, but outside of the facility type activities, trying to grow and mesh together. But I think this offensive line, because I know people are asking about it, I think we will see an improvement, Reed. I don't know the exact ceiling for the group. I just don't, because there's a lot of factors, a lot of new faces. But I think it will be better. And that is encouraging, because we know it has to be. And to be fair, the way I view it is they don't have to be necessarily like a top 25, top, even top 50, I don't think. I don't think it has to be that. It just has to be enough. It just can't be what it was last year. It has to be enough of a priority where it's balanced, where it can help open things up, where it can help take pressure off the quarterbacks. And I think as long as they can achieve that, they should be in a much better position. That said, I think that's very doable, right? And I think as long as you set those kind of expectations for this group, I think you should be in good shape. Just don't go into it thinking there's going to be a complete 180. Might be a little bit more like a, I don't know, 45 or well, like maybe a 90. Even 90 would be great.
Yeah.
Maybe not a 180.
And Christian, I think too, like, I remember we had this conversation right when this schedule was dropped, right? Like, was this 2026 schedule more favorable than the 2025? And really knowing now that our offensive line, like you said, is going to have plenty of new faces and a new coach leading the way, I think the schedule kind of, in a sense, really makes it for where they're – can be some, you know, those errors to happen early, right? Because we start the season off at home against East Carolina, unlike last season where we did start on the road against a Power 5 team in Florida State, right? But then we also start SEC play right after that on the road. So I think this schedule kind of forbids a little bit of, you know, learning from the mistakes early, right? Because out the gate, like, we were we had to come ready to play. Like, no credit, you got to come ready to play every game. But when it's right. a Power 5 team like Florida State on the road on for the first road. Game, you know, unlike this first game this year, when you're playing at home against East Carolina, you know, you're able to have a little bit more leeway, if that makes sense.
No, I think it makes perfect sense. And just to hit on that, I mean, I'll put the schedule here on the screen real quick so you guys can see it. This is how I see it happen. I mean, like you mentioned, you got East Carolina at home, and they're a respectable opponent. They're not necessarily, you know, Florida State. I know Florida State wasn't great ultimately, but you get the point. It's a step below a team like that. Of course, we know that, but they're respectable at least. You got them at home. So I think it's a good combination of like nothing too crazy, but enough to kind of get your feet wet. And then you mentioned going on the road in an SEC environment and playing at Kentucky the following week. A lot of people feel like that game could have the recipe of a trap game. Potentially, we'll have to see. I know there's a lot of, you know, new pieces there. Definitely think it won't be as, you know, simple as maybe you just viewing, hey, this is a Kentucky, you know, game. Normally in the past, you think Kentucky, it's like, okay, this is easy money. I think it's going to be a little bit more challenging than that. But I think those two alone are like, how do I explain this? They're challenging, but it's not overbearing to start the season. Does that make sense?
That's practically how I was trying to explain it, is that it's not really exactly. overbearing, unlike, you know, Florida State last year right out the gate.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a challenge, as you go head first into things, knowing most teams don't even truly even know what they have week one. To be honest with you, like, you can expect your team to be a certain way, but you really don't truly know what you have until it's live bullets. You get out there, and I think that kind of happened to us against Florida State. I've talked to people, and they've even told me, you know, training camp, that staff, everybody in that building was extremely high on that football team. I think the confidence was very high. Maybe it was almost too high. I don't know, but they didn't expect to go down to Florida State and what happened to have happened, if you get what I'm saying. So I do kind of like the setup here. It's like you got two good challenges, you know, week one and week two, but nothing overbearing, but enough to kind of get your feet wet. Maybe iron out some of those growing pains. You got a revenge game with Florida State back at home. Hopefully, you know, guys feel that emotion from it. There's a lot of guys on this team, right? Retention was very high that played in that game last year. You know, I expect them to come out hot for that one. Then you got South Carolina again at home. Another very solid opponent, right? Record's not really going to speak for it, but they've got good players. We always know South Carolina plays us tough. I guess the point I'm making is the theme is you got good challenging games that are completely doable, right? Completely winnable. Probably not just going to be some easy feat, but I think that's good for this team. I think that's what they need, because the point that I'm trying to make, the long-winded way of saying, by the time you do get to the Georgia, Tennessee, A&M, and LSU stretch, I feel like a lot of those growing pains are going to kind of be out the way. You know, I think Josh Pace was saying that, like, you'll have a good idea on what you have by the time you get to that point, right? Like, his point was, hey, you don't have that Georgia game week three when you're still trying to figure things out, when the offensive line is still trying to, you know, figure themselves out, when the quarterback is still, hell, you might be trying to figure out who the true quarterback is still at that point. We don't know. The battle could extend a couple games into the season. So all that I say to basically say that I could see this team, if they do figure things out, if they have a more consistent running game that offers them some more balance, if the defense can kind of patch up some of the, again, defense has been very solid last couple of seasons. There's no denying that. But I think consistency at stopping the run, affecting the quarterback a little bit better. I think if they could fix those two things, I think they could be even better as a defense. We'll have to see if they've done enough in the offseason to get to that point. But I think this team could end up sneaking out a 10-2 final record if all those things go right. But that's the big if, right? I mean, because to be fair, I could see a floor being in an 8-4 team, which people get frustrated hearing that. But when you think about it, Reed, I mean, again, Georgia, they're going to be a good football team, right? I mean, sometimes these games come down to one possession, right? A couple big key moments in the game. And fortunately, a lot of those have really fallen in our favor last few years. Think about it. Auburn on the road last season, we had a couple gutsy calls that ultimately helped secure that. I mean, forcing a fumble, like South Carolina, that could have been a loss.
Exactly.
Right? But the ball fell in our favor. Even going back 2 years ago, we played South Carolina, same deal. So my point being is when you hear people say 8-4, don't freak out and get mad and then start cussing at people. Because to be fair, when you play a competitive schedule and you play in a conference like the SEC and you know these games come down to it, you just never know which way that ball is going to fall. And fortunately, it's been kind of falling in our favor. That being said, you know, you got Georgia, you got Tennessee on the road. I don't know too much about Tennessee right now. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But I just know it's tough playing at Rocky Top. And then A&M, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think Mike Elko is doing a phenomenal job. I'm seeing the way they're recruiting, right? I mean, I think they've already got like almost a handful of five stars, it feels like, probably two or three, but still they're not slowing down anytime soon. And then LSU, I know no one really knows what they'll be, but I know you have a good chance of being pretty good when you have some good football players, and that's exactly what they got via the transfer portal. And I think Lane Kiffin's a great coach alongside, you know, Weiss, his offensive coordinator. I think they're a great duo, and they do some really good things. So it's going to be an interesting deal. But yeah, I mean, it's same old talk that we've been talking about. Nothing's really changed, but I guess it's just kind of resurfacing. I guess last but not least, he had mentioned the recruiting deal. He did mention that there's some guys that I don't think he even used the word expect. I'm pretty sure he said like they anticipate being with them, right? So it sounds like silent commits. I've been saying Gales is a silent commit. I'm like, I think he's one of those guys he's referring to. Like, I would be completely shocked if Gales ends up going somewhere else. I think he's pretty much a silent Alabama commit. The other guys he might be referring to, maybe the defensive lineman. I'm not too sure about that one. The Gales one, I'm like almost positive that you'll hear him commit to Alabama very soon. But that being said, it's kind of interesting. I guess we'll monitor that. Let me ask you this, Reed, before we hit this break. Do you think, because there's a lot of noise about the recruiting right now, and again, people have to remember, when you have a very small class like that, your rating is always going to be much lower, right? I think the example people use is Southern Cal had like 30-something commits. They ended up being a top class. The quality or the average, I guess, rating of their commit was probably a little bit lower than some of the other classes below them. But because you have 30-something players signed or committed, it ends up making your class a little bit higher. When you only have, what, 7-8 guys currently, they're probably going to cap it around 15, maybe 16. They're naturally going to be lower. But even that being said, the caliber of players right now, I think you have maybe, you got Elijah Haven, both quarterbacks, Seaborn, I think they're both 4 stars, and Newkirk. Everybody outside of that is listed as a 3-star recruit, which again, doesn't necessarily matter. But my question to you, Reed, is do you think if they do in fact get Gales, a couple of these other probably silent Bama commits that are, I think probably respectively, probably top 150 type players, maybe say they had 2 or 3 more of those guys, do you think that's enough to silence some of the critics right now? Or do you think people are still just, they're so stuck on seeing Alabama football and top 5 recruiting, I think, for the last, what, 15 plus years, you think they still just aren't going to be ready to accept that, even though really, like we just mentioned, the logistics make all the sense. The size of the class means you're already going to be lower just given the numbers themselves.
Yeah, no, Christian, I think the critics are just always going to criticize. Let's just be honest here, right? That's just naturally going to happen, but I've always been a factor of quality over quantity, right? Because you could get, like you said, like USC, a lot of those guys, but the matter of the fact is there's going to be some of those guys that if you get too many that they're having to compete with others for spots, and at the end of the day, you can only have 11 on offense and 11 on defense. So some players just might not be able to play, and with this current era, transfer portal, NIL, some people are going to get flushed out. So I'm really wanting guys that are quality-based players that fit the system and we know can contribute on whatever it is on special teams, offense, defense, however, to buy into the standard and help Alabama succeed.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that one. Let's hit the timeout. We come back. I know we got Hunter on the phone lines. We'll see what Hunter's got to say. We'll keep talking about this and more. 205-342-9904 is the number. We got Smitty as well. We'll keep on rolling right here on this Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Quick timeout. We'll be right back.
Pipes and I work. Guaranteed or your money back. Because I never met a clog that was going to unclog itself. Green Gobbler. Let the gobbler get it.
Hey, it's Christian Miller, and I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy, founded by attorney and professor Adam Lamparello, helping students at every level with mentoring, exam prep, applications, and career planning. Adam also represents students, faculty, and athletes in academic misconduct, First Amendment, NIL, and criminal defense cases. Known for real care and relentless
action. Once all the tickets are sold, you don't have to be present to win. To purchase tickets, Venmo at Brandon-Massengale, or bring cash to Jess Sumner at Cypress Supply.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping.
That's 800-923-6829. What do you have to lose? Call 800-923-6829. Again, 800-923-6829.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Here's your Tuscaloosa and West Alabama forecast. A lot of rain all the way here over the next several days. We have a flood watch in place through 7 p.m. Friday night. Showers and storms expected here this afternoon. As we'll see, those temperatures climb to 87. Storms continue tonight, 74. More heavy rain and storms tomorrow and Friday, 81 tomorrow, 86 on Juneteenth Friday. Rest of the holiday weekend, wet, upper 80s. Richard Webbing at the Weather Channel for Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
It's 83 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Your front row seat to all things Alabama.
Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTPC, the home of Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
Back into this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Let's jump over to the phone lines, 205-342-9904. We got Hunter up first. Hunter, welcome in.
What's up, Christian?
Hunter, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. How are you?
I can't complain, man. Another day, another dollar, man. Talk to me, man. Are you quizzing us today, or are you jumping in on this conversation? Okay,
now, I got a tough question for you.
Oh, hell, man. All right. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you this. Okay.
All right.
Who is the best current college football coach right now that does not have a national championship?
Oh, that does not have a national championship?
That does not have a national championship that is coaching currently as a head coach.
Man, that's tough. Man, so that rules out Kirby, Ryan Day,
Signetti,
of course. Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I really like Lane Kiffin. I know people talk a lot about what he has not won, but I just think when you look at what he was able to do going to a place like Ole Miss, the consistency he had there, building that program to be what it is, then just my time being around him, just knowing how smart he is. He's a great offensive mind. I understand the theatrics off the field, but I think Lane is a great coach. I mean, I like Dan Lanning a lot. The consistency that he's had at Oregon has been great, especially the regular season. I mean, it's been very impressive what he's done. I guess just postseason wise, I just need to probably gain a little bit more ground there. That's tough, man. Let me pull up a list, man. Reed, you want to throw any names out there while I think on this? I mean, of course you got Kalen DeBoer, Sarkisian in that conversation, maybe, but
Marcus Freeman.
Oh yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, dude. Yeah, Marcus Freeman's a great coach. Yeah, that's I might have to go with Marcus Freeman on that. I mean, this is tough, man. To be honest with you, this is a tough one. I know it's subjective, but I really do like Marcus Freeman. Damn, I would maybe go Marcus Freeman. Like I said, I do like maybe Lane on that one. I know some people aren't going to agree with that. That's fine. But I would probably say maybe Lane or Marcus Freeman, I think, are two that I would heavily consider in that conversation. And I know people are going, but what about Kalen DeBoer? I think Coach DeBoer is a fantastic coach as well. I think he's up there, and he definitely deserves that right. I mean, I get it. We just talked about the whole comparison with, I think, Chris Lowe's list, where he had Kalen DeBoer below Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian. And I'll be the first one to tell you, like, that deserves a debate right there, right? I mean, with his record against, you know, all the coaches on that list, I think he's probably got the best record against ranked opponents. Really, he, and I told my dad this yesterday, he checks every box in terms of if you put him side by side next to any of those coaches like Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, and various others, he'll check every box and have an advantage on every single one of them, except for probably the losses that you shouldn't have taken. That's the biggest thing that's working against him. And I think it kind of is a little bit of a, it just kind of deducts from his points, if that makes sense. I don't know how to explain it, but that's it. Really, if you ask anybody on the outside looking in, that's all they go to. Nobody can argue, you know, his record against ranked opponents, his ability to, you know, to lead a team. He brought Washington to a national championship. Alabama went to the SEC championship year number two. But it's just the games, the losses that he shouldn't take, I feel like kind of hovers over his head, and it somewhat kind of knocks the perception of Coach DeBoer. I mean, what do you think? I guess you can give me your answers to your first question, and what do you think about that?
I mean, that's kind of the same thing with Sark and Marcus Freeman. I mean, Marcus Freeman lost to NIU in 24 and then goes True. To or plays Miami and A&M last year, lost to both of them, and then, yeah, DeBoer lost to Florida State last year, and then Sark loses to Florida. They should have never lost to Florida.
And what do you think was worse, the Florida loss or the Florida State loss for Alabama?
Florida State. It was most definitely Florida State.
But see, I think also, too, when you also add...
Went into OT with Mississippi State as well. And didn't they go into OT with Kentucky, too?
I don't remember, if I'm being completely honest with you.
I'm going to look it up, actually.
I don't remember, but I'll just say this. I think maybe it's just because Alabama. They did?
Yeah.
That's fair. No, that's fair. Like, well, to be clear, I mean, I didn't name Sark on my list for your question, though. So, but I still think Sark's a great coach. But I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm sure Coach DeBoer does get a little bit more criticism than others, right? But I think that's kind of what comes with being at Alabama, whether you want to, you know, call it fair or not. That's just kind of how it works, man. I mean, Alabama is going to be under my microscope, whoever the coach is. We all know that's going to be the case. But you're right. I mean, he probably is a little bit a little unfairly judged, maybe you should say. But
Now, Christian, where would you put James Franklin in this category?
In terms of just comparing him to the other coaches,
or just like with him without a natty, like give me your top five basically.
Top five coaches without a natty.
Without a natty, so one being the best, and it's like the fifth, kind of like.
Well, I mean, I don't have. I'm limited on this before we hit this break, so I'm sure without. I won't put them in an order, but let me just throw them out there. We had Marcus Freeman, Dan Lanning. Who are the other ones that I named? Lane Kiffin, Coach DeBoer, and then you're saying throw in James Franklin. I'd put James Franklin below. I think I'd probably have him towards the bottom of that list if it was me.
Yeah.
I think that top three would definitely be, you know, Coach DeBoer, Lanning, and Marcus Freeman. And then, oh no, wait, I forgot Lane. Damn. I'm five though. I don't know about, honestly, I would probably replace James Franklin. I respect him. I think he's a good football coach. But I would consider replacing him with maybe, oh man, that's tough. I don't know, man. I don't know. You can just leave him on there, man. It is tough. I mean, that's tough. You can leave James Franklin on there. That's fine. You can leave James Franklin on there. I like Whitnam, who's at Michigan now, but I don't know where I would put him in that whole deal.
What about Elko?
Damn, that's a really good question. That's a good one, too. Yeah, I forgot about Elko. Damn, yeah. I would bump James Franklin down and throw Mike Elko in there.
Mike Elko?
Maybe I would do that. How about this? I'm going to take this top of the hour break to think on this, and I'll try to rank them when we come back, even though I don't have much confidence that I'm going to ever come up with an answer for you. I'll try, though.
You're good.
I'll try, though. Listen, you woke me up today. I was sleepwalking a little bit, and now you woke me up because I'm like, golly, I got to think on this, man.
And don't forget, John Tyson. With it.
I'm good on him, man. I'm not going to lie.
Bobby Hill.
Well, no, but a couple years ago, yeah. But I feel like right now, I don't know. I feel like he's kind of, he's trending down a little bit, in my opinion, just for me. Not like, nothing crazy, but I'll pass on him. I like Elko, though. I'll take Elko. Let me think on it, and I'll keep listening, and I'll give you something a little bit more definitive when we come back.
I got you, man.
Appreciate you, Hunter.
Yes, sir.
Good stuff, man. Yes, sir, you too, man. All right, we got to hit the top of the hour break. We come back. We keep on rolling right here on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Dan Byer.
Another full day of World Cup action, and it starts in Houston at the top of the hour as Portugal will face the Democratic Republic of Congo in Group K play. Group K wraps up tonight with Uzbekistan facing Colombia and Mexico City at 10 o'clock Eastern. England gets their World Cup underway in Group L against Croatia in Dallas at 4 o'clock Eastern time. Ghana and Panama play in Group L in Toronto at 7 o'clock Eastern time tonight. A report from ESPN says the Utah Jazz and center Walker Kessler remain apart in talks on a deal for the restricted free agent. The report says Kessler turned down a 5-year offer for $140 million from Utah. The PGA Tour and DP World Tour have joined the USGA and RNA in their efforts to roll back the golf ball. In a joint statement today, the entities agreed to set a date of January in 2030 for all levels of the sport to control distance. The Toronto Maple Leafs named Jim Hiller as their new head coach.
Hey, it's Christian Miller, and I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy, founded by attorney and professor Adam Lamparello, helping students at every level with mentoring, exam prep, applications, and career planning. Adam also represents students, faculty, and athletes in academic misconduct, First Amendment, NIL, and criminal defense cases, known for real care and relentless advocacy. For guidance you can trust, call 201-317-5115 or visit lamparello-law.com. That's Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy.
Proud what does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case, and this I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing
victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
And knocked down again. It was Christian Miller.
It's time for the Miller's Edge
with four-time SEC champion
and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here's college football playoff national champion
Christian Miller
on Tide 100.9
and 1230 AM WTBC.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230 WTVC. Reed, I got to throw that question to you, man. I can't be the only one sitting here struggling with this one. Hunter asked a great question. Basically, it was, who would you say is the best current head coach in college football that has not won a national championship? Then it turned into kind of, I guess, top five head coaches that haven't won a national championship. And with no specific order, I think we threw out, you know, Marcus Freeman, Lane Kiffin, Kalen DeBoer, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian. I know Hunter also mentioned James Franklin as well. I think Whittingham. Yeah, Mike Elko was another one that came in there. I think Whittingham's a good coach as well at Michigan. Do you have any thoughts on that? You don't have to rank them necessarily, but is there one or two maybe that you feel like are a little bit higher than the others on that list for top head coaches currently that have not won a national championship?
No, Christian, I think that group of guys, it's in great coaches, just really is so hard because they all do things just particularly well than others, you know. But this is what I was thinking when you worded that like question that Hunter had, right? The best coach that has not won a national championship yet. I'm thinking, like, outside of that question, like kind of a follow up. Out of all of those guys, which one has the best odds of winning their first one out of the rest, you know? So then I was starting to think that answer right there might swap it up.
Great follow-up. And, of course, you're making me think even harder. Thanks a lot, Reed. No, I'm just kidding. No, well, real quick, let me tackle this real quick. Trevor brought up Cristobal. How can we forget Mario Cristobal, man? Big bad Cuban down in Miami, right, leading his alma mater. I mean, he just took his team to a national championship game. They look to be a very solid team, a team that narrowly got into the college playoffs, but proved they should have been there, and also proved this is why, you know, we have the system that we have and try to get these teams in there even when some people feel they shouldn't be, because that team, without a doubt, was a playoff football team, right? I mean, Coach Saban and others sat up there and said, hey, this Miami team, they need to be in the playoffs. I mean, even Notre Dame, I know a lot of people were, you know, hey, join a conference, but at the end of the day, man, Notre Dame was a good football team. I feel like they could have had a similar run. I'm not saying they would have been to the national championship game, but I think Notre Dame would have definitely put up a good fight if they did make it. That being said, Cristobal, without a doubt, you need to throw him in that conversation, in my opinion. However, if we're going to be, you know, a little critical on taking L's that you should not receive, he's got to be in that conversation too, because he has taken L's that, you know, Miami should, in games that Miami should not have lost. In fact, I mean, there's some of them were due to literally his own. What game was that? I think a critical error as a head coach. I mean, I'm not trying to knock him. I love Cristobal. He's one of my favorite coaches that I've ever had. Granted, you know, I was a defensive guy, but I spent a lot of time on the scout team in 2015. I was playing special teams, but of course, in practice, I was the one over there giving those guys looks. I mean, Cristobal was my guy. I mean, he used to always be happy. Hey, man, you know, we need a look. We need a good look, Christian. Like, I'm like, I got you. So I love Cristobal. Great football coach. Hard nose. You talk about a dude that just loves football. I mean, he's going to, you know, instill physicality in all of his players and all of his guys. I think he definitely needs to be up there. I mean, this is just hard. Like I said, it feels subjective. I'm sure you could pull up records and all these things, but
Christian, I think I figured out the game that you were referring to because it literally just hit me. It was, I believe, in 23 mm-hmm. when Miami should have kneeled the ball, decided to mm-hmm. run, and they fumbled it, and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets would get to win that game.
I was going to say, I want to say it was Georgia Tech, but I wasn't entirely sure. I'm never sure on anything. That's why I always say, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, there's a couple of those moments and a couple of games where they were favored that they should have won, and unfortunately they dropped the ball. So I think it's only fair. You guys know me. I'm not ever going to at least I'm going to try my best not to hold one person to a standard that I don't do the others, right? That's not right. I'm all about calling it even, right? Even if it when it comes to bias, I try not to do that. I try to just be fair. I think it's only fair that we knock Cristobal a little bit for that. So he's kind of similar to Kalen DeBoer, man. They both made it to a national championship game. They didn't win, but they made it. They've also kind of taken some L's that they probably shouldn't have taken. So I guess they're a little similar in that regard. That said, I don't know. I said I was going to try to come out with a ranking. I don't know. It's tough because even when you just mentioned Elko again, I forgot. I would probably put him in that realm. But If you're going off of, I'll end on this before we go back to the phone lines. If you're going off of results, if you're going off of head-to-heads, winning percentages, and all those good things, all those metrics, the stats, I would say it's kind of hard not to put Kalen DeBoer at least, you know, in the realm of being at the top, right? If not the top, at least maybe the second. Because, yeah, again, I don't have these numbers pulled up, but how many times have we seen graphics where it's like Kalen DeBoer's record versus top 25 opponents, Kalen DeBoer's records against, you know, the top head coaches or whatever these records or these stats they throw out. He's always like, I think he still currently holds like the best winning percentage against ranked opponents currently, like out of all coaches or something like that. I've seen stats like that.
Yeah.
And he holds the head-to-head against Sark for sure, Dan Lanning for sure. I guess Kirby Smart now too. I mean, right? He's still 2-1 against Kirby. I know they beat us in the SEC championship game, but that was the first time Kirby beat Coach DeBoer, right? The other two, you know, we got the better of them. So he holds the head-to-head over pretty much everybody. I don't think he's played Lane yet. Mm-hmm. He will this year. We'll kind of see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, I feel like he definitely doesn't get enough respect, Reed. But here's the but I keep bringing up, and I'll add another layer to it. Because again, we just said statistically, in all the analytics, analytically, he takes the cake. He should at least. However, the but is we brought up the one being the games that we, you know, shouldn't have lost, right? Those definitely, I feel like there's a little bit of a cloud that kind of hangs in there. But here's the other thing. I think the other part of it too, Reed, is just the eye test.
Yep.
And me being a former player, man, the way I watch the game, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not trying to make it seem like I watch it better than other people, but I'm just saying, like, I know I'm a fan in the sense of I'm not playing.
Yeah.
But the way I watch football games, man, I watch it from a very technical standpoint.
I was going to say, yeah, like a different perspective.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, and I think a lot of people, whether they're sports pundits, they don't even have to play the game, but when you watch it from a fan perspective versus when you're watching from a technical perspective. And again, you don't have to be a former player to watch it from a technical perspective. I know a lot of people that do that aren't former players. I'm just saying that's how I tend to watch these games. And I know the people that, for the most part, are talking heads or sports pundits, they also do the same. And I think what happens is when you do watch Alabama from that lens, you're going to see a lot of things, or more things, I should say. Maybe not a lot of things, but you'll see things that do kind of just, even though the results or the analytics and these things say one thing, the tape and what your eyes are seeing might tell you a little bit different story. Does that make sense?
100%.
And I think for me personally, it's not that I'm trying to not give Coach DeBoer all the love he deserves when we're saying these conversations. But when I watch some of our games, right, and I'm looking at some of the technical things, and I'm just like, man, like, when I watch the Oregon football team play, it looks a certain way, you know. And then when I watch us play, the inconsistencies that I see, it also looks a certain way. So I'm also kind of like throwing that variable in there. Does that make sense? When I think about these coaches and their teams, their units, that's also kind of being put in there a little bit. And maybe that's not being, I think when a lot of people have these conversations, they're not always putting that. They're just going, hey, he's got a winning record against this guy. He's done this. He's done that. The case is closed.
Yeah.
That's kind of, does that make sense?
Yeah, it really depends on all the criteria that you're going against. If you're trying to put everything together, then that's why it's so difficult, Christian, because there's so many determining factors. But if you, like you said, if you narrow it down to, all right, which head coach and just the eye test, right? Okay, let's just go based off stats on this one, right? And then, okay, we can go based off, you know, head-to-head record on this one. It's trying to put them all together that makes it so difficult. And that's another reason why we rely on Smitty, who he's coming ready to fire.
Yeah, he is, and we got to hit a break first. When we come back, we'll give him all the time in the world. But I guess I'll end on this, and again, I don't mean to say this in a negative manner at all. I'm genuinely asking because this is maybe going to drive my point home a little bit more. When we think of Kalen DeBoer's teams, like do we view them as like a dominant team, Like, even going back to his Washington time. I know, granted, I didn't watch them consistently. I'll be honest. I went back and watched some, but, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I don't think I'm the only person that shares, but I don't know if I view his football teams as dominant necessarily. I view them as, they're definitely, very offensively driven, right? Defensively, they've been a lot better since he's been at Alabama. Kane Womack's done a nice job. But I just, you get what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe it's just the, I don't know how to explain it, man. It's just, and maybe it's because I still have that kind of perception in my mind of, them coming from Washington, very pass heavy. It's just different. But I don't know. The perception I have of, Oregon with Dan Lanning, this physicality and everything that they play with, and then I've seen them just look dominant. You know what I mean? I just don't know if I've seen us really look a whole great deal of dominant all the time. Does that make sense? I'm not saying we've never looked it. But I don't know if we've done it consistent enough for me to form that, idea. Maybe I'm not explaining this well enough. Hopefully you guys are picking up what I'm putting down. There you go. All right, thanks. At least, even if you don't read, thank you. I'll come to my senses during this break and I can explain it better. Or maybe Smitty will have his thoughts on it. We'll get those when we come back. After this quick timeout right here on the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTVC, quick timeout. We'll be right back.
That are dragging down your property's appeal. Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393-9149 for your free estimate today. That's 205-393-9149. Asphalt Restoration, where smooth roads start. Roll Tide.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping.
It's quick, it's easy, and it's free. Go to MyLocalCustomers.com today.
That's MyLocalCustomers.com. MyLocalCustomers.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Here's your Tuscaloosa and West Alabama forecast. A lot of rain on the way here over the next several days. We have a flood watch in place through 7 p.m. Friday night. Showers and storms expected here this afternoon. As we see those temperatures climb to 87. Storms continue tonight, 74. More heavy rain and storms tomorrow and Friday. 81 tomorrow, 86 on Juneteenth Friday. Rest of the holiday weekend wet, upper 80s. Richard Webbing at the Weather Channel for Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Breaking news, bold opinions, and pure Crimson Tide spirit.
Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
WTVC. Let's go back to the phone lines, 205-342-9904. Smitty's up next. Smitty, welcome in.
How's it going, Christian?
What's up, Smitty?
Man. All right, this whole coach thing, right? A lot of it's expectations, right? Let's just be real. And this is why I worry about Kiffin at LSU, because there was no crazy national title bust expectation at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a happy-to-be-there program. LSU has fired coaches shortly after the national title, Les Miles and Coach O. And Brian Kelly was not god-awful, but they got him up out of there. And so it's kind of like Dwight Howard leaving Orlando to join the Lakers. Different expectations, different fans, different media. And I think that's something there. But with these coach rankings, right, here's the thing. I'm glad you mentioned Whittingham. He's an underrated coach. Sataki at BYU's underrated. But Michael Cristobal, Bama fans crying, talking, we could have had him. Let me tell y'all something. He had to rebuild Miami. First year, like 5-7, 7-5, 9-3. He had a number one picking quarterback, but the defense was god-awful. Mind you, all those years, Ruben Bain and Keith Mezzador was there. But he hired a new coordinator, defensive coordinator, and the rest is history with that. You think Alabama fans would have been like, hey, Mario's on the right track. He's a good coach. No, they would have wanted him up out of there. Let's just be real here. And I heard earlier you talked Notre Dame, like they said, should have made the playoffs. No, they shouldn't have. Because the two best teams they played, A&M and Miami, they lost to them. They had no best win. I'm sorry, people. You kind of got to win a big game sometimes against a good team to make the playoff. Sorry, that's what it is. I'm sorry. If they wanted to make damage, they should have beaten either Miami or Texas A&M. Sorry.
No. And I want to be clear. I didn't mean like they should have been in over somebody. So I just meant the quality of team that they are. I just meant I think they would have ended up being similar to Miami in the sense that a lot of people thought Miami might not have really should have been in the playoffs either, right? I think it was kind of interchangeable with those. And then you saw what Miami was able to do. My point was just being that if Notre Dame, in fact, made it into the playoffs, I think they would have probably been similar to Miami and been able to make a run with that opportunity, given the quality of football team that they had. They definitely, in terms of their resume, didn't deserve to make it in. But you get what I'm saying? But with the football team that they had, their head coach, I think they would have they definitely would have been able to make a little bit of run, potentially.
Yeah, and Alabama fans have been getting on Marcus Freeman at Beijing if he had lost to Marshall 1 year at home and NIU the next year. Let's just be real here. They would have been on that man's neck, And Dan Lanning getting, because both forget now, it may look dominant against Oklahoma State last year, which was god-awful, but when Indiana punked them twice. The year before, they were down 34-3 against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and Oregon was number one in the country. So that's no perfect coach. That's no perfect program. And no one's going to be consistently dominant week in, week out like it used to be because you just don't have the rosters like that anymore in a continuity because no one truly knows what they have until they start playing because of the way the sport is now. And like when people rank these teams in preseason, you got to not just look at this year's schedule, but you got to look at last year's schedule as well. Now, do I think A&M will be a pretty good team this year? Yes. But if you look at last year, because I remember this, the only top eight team in the SEC they played last year was Digger's Texas team, and they got smoked. Now, this year they play. They go to Alabama and they go to Oklahoma this year, coming season. And like people are talking about the 8.5 Alabama, the 9.5 of Georgia, because Georgia and Texas got the best odds at 9.5, the best over under. But folks got to consider the 9-game SEC slate now. So that's an extra game against a better opponent. So that win total will go down by one for everybody. I just think people just got to like understand there is a new college football. And that's the way it is in an extra game because you might have an extra loss or a tough game on that slate that may affect you the next week. Because you remember when you played, y'all beat LSU, but y'all were hurting that next week against Mississippi State because that was a tough game. And Mississippi State gave Alabama some problems over the years, especially when they go to Starkville. So I just think that like people just when they look at coaches, most of these guys aren't idiots. But you got to look, sometimes it's expectations there. And sometimes this year may be your year for that coach. Next year it may not because we don't know how Miami going to be. They got a good roster. But let's see. Same thing with Oregon or, even Indiana this year coming up. We'll see. And I just think everything's a year-to-year basis now, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Mitty, because I'm genuinely just curious. I'm curious because, and maybe it's, I told you, or I was saying earlier, when I watch football, I try to look at it from more than just the final score, more than just, stats on a sheet or analytics. I go off the eye test, and I don't know if I could say that I view Coach DeBoer's teams as like dominant football teams. They feel a little bit more finesse. They want to throw the football a lot, right? I'm not saying they don't have success. They win football games, but I just want to ask you, I mean, do you feel differently about that? And then how would you compare, say, how would you stack up Oregon and their football team in the last few years versus Coach DeBoer his last few years, too, here at Alabama, and maybe even back at Washington? Like, do you kind of have that vibe, too? Just the style of play. I'm not talking necessarily about head-to-heads or anything like that. I understand he's got that, but how do you view that? Because, personally, I don't really view us as this big dominant team like that. I view us as a good football team that can win some football games and win tough ones. But I don't know if we're this big dominant football team right now. Personally, I'm just curious what you think.
As a guy who has the quad box on every Saturday for college football, who watches everybody, it's like not just the SEC. Oregon was not this physical juggernaut last year. Like, hey, we're gonna line up and make you quit. They weren't. Good team, but they weren't. And they had a lot of injuries at receiver, stuff like that. Ohio State was this dominant team. They just played a weak schedule. And when they played the teams that could match them physically, like Indiana, Miami, you saw what happened. Texas and Ole Miss weren't necessarily lined up and be the most physical teams out there. They weren't, but they won games. And remember, Texas rushing attack was awful too. Not bad as Alabama, it was pretty awful. But, you know, Alabama kind of makes the news on everything. They kind of, you know, they get more clicks, everybody. Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, he's not necessarily line the ball up 45 times and make you quit. He's a pass guy. But the thing is, when you win games, no one says anything. And I just think the days of being super dominant week in, week out, even against the top competition, days are over. Alabama wasn't that at the end because the way the sport is. So I just look at it as, would I like them to dominate everybody, beat them 55-0? Sure. But I am not going to apologize for winning. Winning a game because the way the sport is now.
I was going to say, like, I've always said this. I mean, in Coach DeBoer's defense, or any coach for that matter, I mean, there's 1,000 ways to skin a cat, right? I mean, and I've said that. If you can win football games, you can win football games. Even at Alabama, it might not look the same as it did. They might throw the ball a whole hell of a lot more. They might not run it as much or have the same level of success. But if they can put points on the board and stop others from scoring points, that's really all that matters at the end of the day. I'm a firm believer of that. I can get behind that. My thing is, when we talk about dominance, I'm not even just saying so much the score. I know I mentioned that. That's part of the metric. But the other is, you know, can you line up and play a physical style of football? Can you make the other team quit? Can you do what you want to do? Or are you letting the other team control what you do? That's what I would define as being a dominant team. And I don't know if I can say yes to a number of those. For example, even as from, you know, running game perspective, right? Like, I feel like to be a dominant football team, you've got to be able to line up and run the football at will. You might not have to make it, yes, it needs to be a priority, but what I'm saying is you can still want to throw the football. That might be your bread and butter. But in the critical moments where it is, you know, imperative that you do run the ball, whether that's your 4-minute offense, end the game, right? Whatever the situation may be, fourth or third and short, instead of, you know, resorting to trick plays, you should be able to line up and say, we're going to run inside zone, duo, whatever the case is, and we're going to pick up this conversion. We haven't been able to do that. So that's where my question comes in. I just pulled up these stats. And again, I mean, the stats aren't everything, but Oregon also was 20th nationally. And I will agree with your point, right? Level of competition that they played on a week-to-week basis was not the same as Alabama. We had 4 straight ranked opponents. I do take that into consideration, but I still got to give credit where it's due. Oregon was able to run the ball for, on average, 199 yards per game, which put them at 20th in the country, you know, versus our whatever we were, right? Like 118 on average for, I don't know, us being, I don't know, 120 something in the country. Like, those are factors that I'm also including when I talk about just being dominant. But again, that's just my perception. That's why I'm asking you. I want to know somebody else's opinion. And again, that's not a knock. That's just an observation. Yeah. I just don't really view.
Yeah.
So the reason I say this to circle all the way back. So when we're talking about ranking coaches, I know a lot of people wonder why Coach DeBoer doesn't get the benefit of the doubt sometimes when stacked up against some of those other other coaches. And I'm just saying, I think that is kind of being thrown into the equation as well as a little bit. I think it's the unexpected losses. Yeah. And then just not from an eye test, it doesn't always have that same perceived dominance or that look. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. And Oregon, their problem last year wasn't running the football. It was actually passing against better teams.
Right.
You know, they had down receivers, and Dante Moore's stats weren't as good against the better teams. But, hey, yes, they still won a lot of games. But here's the thing. Miami had two unexpected losses last year, right? And they had a quarterback they didn't want throwing the ball. But they ran the ball well because they had Mark Fletcher as an NFL back. The thing I will look at is, and I said at the beginning, they should not have hired Ryan Grubb, keep Nick Sheridan. And it's crazy that Nick Saban almost hired Grubb. And imagine how that would have turned out, you know, with a quarterback like Milrose, but like he uses legs as well. And so
it would have been short-lived. I can answer that question for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's what I'm saying. So sometimes the best moves you make are the ones you don't make. But part of it also is personnel as well. Because I'm sorry. Sometimes the coaches are telling you what they think by what they call. And I'm like, and this is why I'm tough on Daniel Hill. Son, you're 240 pounds. You built like a god. Put your head down and use that 240, you know, and get that yard. Even, cause I know Jan was banged up all year. He didn't have a chance. And but I just think something like that. And the thing that worried me about Grubb, that's that FSU game, he said, we didn't get men explosives. I'm like, dude, you're not supposed to get explosives with the run game. You're supposed to control the game with the run game. And I was like, this ain't going to work. And I think, like, that is something that they have to do, and I agree with you on that, where you got to line up and get that yard. Because trick plays, to me, you're telling your team you ain't confident in them. And I think sometimes you just have to line up and just run the ball. Like that Indiana game, just line up and get the yard. If you don't get the yard, at least you did it running the ball. Up the middle.
Yes, 100%. I agree.
Yeah, like that Super Bowl with Seattle and Baltimore, like in the Patriots. Just run the ball four times. You don't get any, shake their hand. You know, and that's the thing right there. Because at least fans and media said, well, you understand. They were just better at that play. I just think that with them, it's partly personnel, and it's partly Grubb. And I tell you one thing that hurt the run game last year, Christian. You know this. Tight ends are very valuable to the run game. They only had one tight end, like with Quavis, because Dana Lewis was always hurt. In the game he was healthy, they ran the ball fine against Georgia. But they had the young guys, like, at tight end. But, you know, this freshmen typically aren't ready to play tight end at the SEC level. You know, and they threw those young guys out there, and they weren't ready. And I think it'll be better this year. And I think they just have to line up and get that yard. They have to just call it. And I'll take it off the air, Chris. And thanks for taking my call. And also, if I don't hear from you this week, don't cheap out your daddy's Father's Day gift this year, man. Hey, take care of the old man, man.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, wow, really?
Hey, listen, if he comes back on the show a couple times this week, then he's only got two more opportunities. That's today. I think we'll see how that gift ends up being. Let me ask you one thing as we get out of here for this next segment, Smitty. We're talking about dominant teams. I know we talked about what team or what programs we would say are elite currently, or whatever the phrasing we used last week. Since I asked you the question about Alabama, maybe even Oregon, who would you list as a dominant team currently in college football? Like right now, whether it's based off last year and going into this year, because again, you said, you know, your criteria for it and kind of what you expect. Are there any teams that you could say right now that you would label as a dominant football team? That way I can try to stack Alabama and some other teams up to them and kind of get an idea.
I would say last year would be Indiana, but I got to see what they do with a new quarterback, and they lost a lot of those players. We'll see what happens. I think they'll be good. I think you have to go with, honestly, Ohio State. But we'll see what they do about missing all those top 10 player defense. Man, imagine if DeBoer lost like that with top 10 defenders. What would people be saying? But I think Ohio State might be my pick, to be honest with you, if I had to pick one program. And I think Oregon... Yeah. They could be up there as well, but they got to show up in the postseason as well. But I think if I had to pick one team, I would think it's Ohio State based on year in, year out the past couple of years. And Alabama has a shot to get there, though. But I had to pick Ohio State right now.
That's fair. That's fair. I respect it. Smitty, I appreciate you as always, man. Always good stuff from you, brother.
Take it easy, good brother.
Yes, sir. You too, my guy. All right, we got it. Time out. We come back. We keep on rolling on this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393.
Data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, it's Christian Miller, and I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy, founded by attorney and professor Adam Lamparello, helping students at every level with mentoring, exam prep, applications, and career planning. Adam also represents students, faculty, and athletes in academic misconduct, First Amendment, NIL, and criminal defense cases, known for real care and relentless advocacy.
Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more, or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
Yes! Roll Tide all the time.
This is Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
The home of Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
WTBC. Just got done talking with Smitty, and of course, always a good conversation. Reed, I gotta pass it over to you, man. I want you to chime in and give your thoughts on what we just talked about with Smitty. I guess you can piggyback off the last part, man. If we had to pick one, we're talking about dominant teams and kind of what that looks like. Would you agree? Like, your criteria is pretty similar. Like, well, let me start there, and I'll ask the chat this too. If you guys want to chime in, like, what do you guys consider dominant? Because I think it is important to first kind of set the precedent there, because if you're going off of dominant teams from 10 years ago, which crazy saying that, but 10 years ago, like when I was playing here, that would have been 2016. Everybody talks about that dominant defense. And, you know, guys like Ryan Anderson, Tim Williams on the edges, and then even the reserves, right? I mean, like, you had guys like myself, you had Anthony Jennings, like we were the guys rolling in to offer support, you know, and then Rashawn Evans, you had Reuben Foster, you had Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne. I mean, there's just a lot of just dudes, right? And you saw the dominant performances, not just a couple times, but it was almost like we pulled up the record, I think, a couple weeks ago. And I even forgot, because I'll be honest, we're so focused on the game, I'm not even paying attention to the score. We're just going out there and just focus one play at a time, like Coach Saban said. But when you go back and you look and you're like, man, we were beating conference opponents 50-something to 3, like consistently. I mean, we all know, like, that's dominant. But you don't see that as much nowadays. You just don't, from anybody.
Yeah.
So first part of that is, what would you consider your current definition of a dominant team in today's college football? And who might that be, if there is one or a couple?
Well, Christian, when I think of dominance, right, I think of you're able to completely beat the other team on all cylinders, right? So on offense, that would be, you know, your pass game, your run game, your offensive block, pretty much just anything on the offense, the defense, and the special teams, right? But not just that, right? If you are getting, let's just say someone's equally matching you, let's just say in the pass game, right? Then you're not afraid to resort to that run game and beat them there. So it's, hey, we're going to dominate you on every cylinder of the game, but if you're matching us somewhere, then we're able to adjust and then beat you there. We're going to find a way, no matter what, to beat you at your own game, right? That, at least that's how I think of what dominance truly is.
That's fair. Any teams that you think fit that mold? Is there anybody that you could name? I mean, we got to pick one. We can't say there's not. I guess you could have a world where there is none. But I find there's got to be somebody. I know Smitty, before we let him go, he mentioned Indiana, then also Ohio State. I gave a little pushback during the break on Indiana, just because if you go back and watch some of those games, especially during the regular season, they had a number of close games and a number of games where they didn't particularly look dominant. They definitely put on, you know, some great showings of, man, they're playing some damn good defense here. Or, man, you know, you're just watching the drive that they had to beat Penn State late in the game. But I can't say they consistently felt like a dominant team. They felt like a very well-coached team, a team that, you know, was very built, I guess, well all around, but didn't always look like the most dominant team. Now, they did look like that when they played Alabama. They did look like that when they played Oregon. So I do give them credit on those. I think it's kind of a similar story for Ohio State, right? Ohio State, I mean, there was moments where they looked dominant. Their defense, I mean, you look at the talent that they had. There's moments where the offense, I mean, Julian Sam was extremely efficient. But there also were some moments where, I mean, their offense didn't have that same explosiveness to it. Or, you know what I mean? They had some – but I do feel like they feel probably like one of the most dominant teams. Again, I don't think there's anybody along the lines of what we just described earlier. But I would say maybe Ohio State. Other than that, I'll be honest with you, Reed, just if you just look at the top 10, I mean, I don't know if anybody really feels – I mean, he mentioned Oregon a little bit. Anybody in your mind that still feels dominant?
I think year in, year out, I'm going to have to agree with you and Smitty. I think it is Ohio State, especially heading into this next season. But Julian Sand, who, if he even progresses just a little bit from what he had last season and fix up a little of his few errors that he had, he'll mm-hmm. be up there for one of the best players in college football. Jeremiah Smith, we all know the generational talent he is. And then Bo Jackson, I mean, at running back. When I was thinking about, like, labeling, you know, that they're dominating on all cylinders, the first team that came to my head just from watching last season and heading into this next season was Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would probably be the closest thing to it maybe right now. Similar to what we came up with when we said, what was that? I think we had a conversation about what, like top programs or something like that. I can't remember what it was. I think we ended up walking away with Ohio State, but it's interesting, Reed. The more you look at all the teams just from last football season, it's hard to say there really is any dominant teams left like that, which I know this sounds kind of, I know we're going all over the place here, but it almost makes me wonder. It's like, man, as much as we do complain about NIL, is it as big of an issue as we like to make it? I mean, when you think about it, I mean, if you don't have dominant teams, that typically signifies that there's some decent parity going on. So maybe it's not as big of an issue. I mean, it definitely is an issue from this is not sustainable. But in terms of providing parity, I mean, I feel like the proof is kind of right there. I mean, there's no true dominant team right now. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, are we over-exaggerating slightly?
No, and that's what I was about to say, Christian, is really the fact of, especially with NIL and having to retain players and losing players, like there's just so much uncertainty going into each season that we're like, hey, maybe this team, like in Indiana, was dominant this last season. But with them not only having guys that transferred in, transferred out, people graduating, going on to the NFL, there's just so much now that it's like you said, there's so much parity that it's kind of hard to see one team consistently dominating. I think that's the main part. Because like you said, Ohio State, there was times where they were dominating a good bit, but it's the fact of consistency.
Yeah, I agree. Consistency is the biggest, the difference here, right, between what you used to see, right, there was consistent dominance, you know, whether it was Clemson, whether it was Alabama, and even Georgia for a couple of years. And then now it just is like, man, I don't even know where to start when you talk about a consistent dominant team. I don't even know if that exists. It's hard to find one. We got to hit a timeout. We come back. We close things out on this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge title.
Dodge Ram, Tuscaloosa's destination for iconic Jeeps. Drive a new 2026 Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab 4x4 priced at $54,529.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama,
we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are U/CWP to learn more. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner. VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.
Hey, it's Christian Miller, and I wanted to tell you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy, founded by attorney and professor Adam Lamparello, helping students at every level with mentoring, exam prep, applications, and career planning. Adam also represents students, faculty, and athletes in academic misconduct, First Amendment, NIL, and criminal defense cases, known for real care and relentless advocacy.
$1,000. Great atmosphere, outstanding customer service. Where they do that at? Bama Entertainment, where the odds are always in your favor. Take exit 45 off 2059.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case. In this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Here's your Tuscaloosa and West Alabama forecast. A lot of rain on the way here over the next several days. We have a flood watch in place through 7 p.m. Friday night. Showers and storms expected here this afternoon, as we'll see those temperatures climb to 87. Storms continue tonight, 74. More heavy rain and storms tomorrow and Friday, 81 tomorrow, 86 on Juneteenth Friday. Rest of the holiday weekend, wet, upper 80s. Richard Wedding at the Weather Channel for Town Square Media Tuscaloosa.
It's 86 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Stay locked in, Tide fans.
This is Tide 100.9
and 1230 AM WTBC,
the home of Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC. Just a few short minutes left. Real quick, let me remind you about our friends over at Lamparello Law Education Advocacy. Make sure you guys check them out. Any criminal defense matters, of course. If you need any assistance with any of those issues, it could be academic misconduct, NIL situation, they got you covered. And the big thing is they do it for affordable prices. So head on over to lamparello-law.com. You can schedule a consultation. But not only that, you can learn more about the other services that they offer, whether that's test taking, preparation, subject matter mastery, academic and career planning for high school, college, and graduate students. They got you covered all right there. Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy. Their website, lamparello-law.com, and their YouTube channel, where they offer free legal advice as well, at Lamparello Law on YouTube. Make sure you guys go check them out for all of those services that they provide, because they are the official representation here on the show. And they do a phenomenal job of what they do. And I would love for those guys to have the opportunity to represent you like they represent us here on the Miller's Edge at Lamparello Law Education and Advocacy. All right, Reed, we only got a couple minutes left. I know I wanted to get to a couple points from the Josh Pate interview. He was on Crane and Cone, but we'll probably just save that for tomorrow. No, a number of similar talking points. Record predictions, stuff like that, quarterback battle talk. We'll definitely we'll have to pull that up tomorrow. But I want to hit this real quick because I know we only got a couple minutes left, even if we have that much time. But just to kind of put a bow on this whole Sorsby situation, I know we talked about it yesterday. The results are he's headed to the supplemental draft, but a lot of people don't know exactly how that works. So I wanted to play this quick clip. It's from Adam Schefter, and he was explaining exactly kind of what to expect from this whole situation with Sorsby. So this is what he had to say.
Supplemental draft coming, basically, if you said somebody's willing to give it up. And what is an expected supplemental draft pick? And is that next year's draft pick that they're giving up?
Yeah, it would be the corresponding pick in that round. So let's just say any one of the teams that we mentioned. And again, I think there's questions about which one would take him due to the rookie quarterbacks they already took in this past draft. Let's just say the Browns. No, it's not like they go team by team. They just send it in. We will put in a bid in this round, I believe. I think that's how it works. So all of a sudden, they go, okay, because I remember in previous supplemental drafts, when there have been certain players being picked, like I'd say, I get a text, okay, first round's over, no bids. Second round's over, no bids. Third round's over, no bids. Fourth round's over, no bids. Jalen Thompson was the last player picked in 2019, and it was the fifth or the sixth round from Arizona when they took him.
So there you have it. That is a little bit of an explanation on that. So we'll talk a little bit more tomorrow where we think he might land, because a lot of people view him as a first-round prospect, but clearly I don't think that's going to be the case with all the stuff going on with that. That being said, we got to get out of here. Big thanks to Reed behind the glass, everybody else a part of this, making it happen, all of our listeners via Tide 100.9, our streams at the Miller's Edge on all platforms. We appreciate you guys. And we look forward to doing it again tomorrow on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9.